When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you were to poll most Americans, and they have, 83% said they didn't feel as if they could afford to buy a new car. 83%, okay? That's a huge number who says, I can't afford to play in this sandbox anymore.
Hi, and welcome to Wealthy On. I'm James Conner, and today my guest is Ray Shefska. Ray and his son, Zach, run a YouTube channel called Car Edge, and Ray is going to give us the straight goods on the U.S. auto industry and whether or not now is a good time to buy a car. Ray, thank you very much for joining us today. How are things in Venture City, New Jersey?
Well, it's warm today, and as I like to say, this is probably the windiest place on earth. But it's beautiful here at the Jersey Shore. If you've ever been to Atlantic City, then you've almost been to Ventnor.
Well, I'm going to have to check it out sometime.
You're not really missing much, but I kind of like it here.
Ray, I am looking forward to this discussion. We've had a lot of our viewers ask to have an auto expert on, so you're that guy. And typically we discuss the economy, so I want to get discuss what's happening within the auto industry and across the U.S. and if there's any read-through to the economy. But before we do that, why don't you just tell our viewers who you are and what your background is?
Well, as James said, my name's Ray Shefska. I spent 43 years in the retail automobile business, managing dealerships, running dealerships, even working, starting as a salesman and working my way up. 4.5 years ago, my son and I started a business called Car Edge, where we figured we could help people navigate the car buying experience, using my inside information to, provide people with the same information that dealerships have. And that started 4.5 years ago and has grown dramatically. We started on YouTube, and we also have a website called caredge.com with free guides, all kinds of tools, buy, sell tools, anything that you need for the automotive business, we've got it to help you figure out how to buy your next car.
And why don't you just tell us what you do on your YouTube channel and how often you publish or release?
We have two main channels on YouTube. We have the Car Edge channel, where literally we release three videos a week. And that is, I'm trying to think the days that we actually do it. I believe it's Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. And those videos typically are anywhere from 8 minutes to 15 minutes long, where we delve into a particular topic that that we can get fairly deep into to really explain to people what's going on. And then Monday through Friday on the Ray and Zach channel on YouTube, we do our daily news that you can use show, where we delve into the news of the day to see what's going on in the automobile business. And that those shows normally run anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes.
Man, so those two channels keep you extremely busy.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention my son makes me work on Saturday night because we do a Saturday night live show on the Car Edge channel as well at 7 o'clock, and that normally runs from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Saturday. He's just a slave driver. He didn't like the fact that I retire after 43 years.
And I'm curious, how many people show up to that live show on Saturday night?
Well, typically those shows end up with a viewership of somewhere around 150,000, it's pretty crazy. Between the two channels, the Car Edge channel and the Ray and Zach channel, we reach somewhere between 6 to 7 million views a month.
So Ray, let's get into it. I have a real love-hate relationship with dealerships. I love going into the dealership and checking out the new cars, but I hate the whole negotiating process because every time I buy a new car, I feel like I'm getting screwed over. And there's always like 10 or 20 additional charges that I can never make sense of on the invoice. And then they're always pitching you on new services like tire insurance. Why don't you just take us through this whole process and how can I better prepare myself so I'm not getting screwed over?
Just so you know, I have that same love-hate relationship with it. The way it's designed is customers are kind of kept in the dark as to everything that's involved in the sale. And as I like to say, car dealership personnel are some of the most creative people on the planet. And what I mean by that is they can create these visions of you being able to come in and buy something at a particular price until you actually get there. And then that's not really the price. And that's normally where the friction begins. That's typically where the customer goes, damn, I hate dealing with these people. These are not like nice human beings. And it's only because the car business has made it this way. Dealership personnel are trained to turn everybody into what's known as a payment buyer. No, they don't want you to know what you're actually paying for the car. They want you to know and concentrate on what your monthly payment is. And the reason for that is if all you're concentrating on is the monthly payment, then they can manipulate the price. They can manipulate the amount of time that you're paying back that loan. So they can make more money when you're just looking at your monthly payment and not what we like to say, the out-the-door price of the vehicle. What's the selling price of the vehicle, including all fees? And that's the part as a customer you really want to concentrate on, not the payment.
And how can I better prepare myself, though, when I go into a dealership? How can I know what the real price is or maybe how much their margins is? How much room do I have to negotiate?
You have to figure on most vehicles, there's somewhere between 5 and 10% of margin built into the selling price. Plus, there's some what's known in the industry as under the line money. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's an invoice price that the dealer pays. And then there's money that they get from that invoice price. For instance, there's something called holdback. And holdback is usually 1.5 to 2% of the base MSRP that the dealer collects after they've sold the vehicle. And then there's advertising assistance that the manufacturer pays the dealer. And that can run $500, $600, $700 a car. And dealers don't pay cash for their vehicles. They finance them just like customers do. And that's called floor planning your inventory. Well, the manufacturers give dealers floor plan assistance. That's more money that's under the line. And floor plan assistance can be another $500, $600, $700, $800. So there could be $2,000 of money that dealerships are getting that are below the invoice amount that they actually paid. So what you just always want to concentrate on is the selling price. And if you know there's usually 5 to 10%, if the vehicle has an MSRP of $50,000, well, there's probably close to $5,000 worth of margin. So work on negotiating that $5,000 down to something that's more amenable to both parties.
And then I guess the other aspect is, like you brought up a good point about dealerships have to finance their inventory. So I guess they're always trying to move that inventory, right? It's no different than any other business because the longer you're sitting on that inventory, the more it's costing you. And maybe you can take us through that, how that process works, how many cars a typical dealership would have and maybe how many days worth of cars or inventory they would have.
Dealerships like to turn their inventory about every 60 to 75 days. Floor plan assistance can cover the cost of financing those vehicles anywhere from 30 to 60 days, depending on the manufacturer. So the quicker you turn it, the less expense there is in having that vehicle sit there. During the pandemic, when there was a shortage of cars, the floor plan assistance from the manufacturer actually became a profit center for dealers because everybody was selling their cars well before they had to make any interest payments on them. So whatever the manufacturer gave them was a profit. We have seen today where what in many months might have been a $15,000 or $20,000 profit to the dealerships, with inventory building back up again, that has gone from a $15,000 to $20,000 profit center to a $100,000 a month or more expense. So if you go, the best way to buy a car the cheapest possible way is to pick out the model you want, go to the dealership and say, I'm interested in X. What's the oldest one of those that you have in stock? Because the older that vehicle is in stock, the more days it's spent on the lot, the greater the motivation is for the sales manager to make that car go away.
Interesting. Okay. So another area that always frustrates the hell out of me when I go to the dealership is after sales service. Okay. I take it in, yes, you know, whatever, let's just say 1,000 miles, and I got to take it in and get it serviced. And every time I go in there, they're charging me another $1,000. It's just, and I've always been told this is another big profit center. Is this true?
Yes. The parts and service departments are really the largest profit center in the dealership. There's a term in the business called service absorption. And what service absorption is they want the service department to produce enough profit that it'll cover a minimum of 70% of the dealership's total expenses, so that sales only has to cover 30%. Good stores that have real strong service departments, that service absorption could be 80, 90, in some cases in excess of 100%. So they produce enough profit to cover every expense in the store. And so whatever they sell new car wise or used car wise is just pure profit. So yes, the service department is a very important aspect of the auto industry. The service advisors are trained, just like salespeople are, to sell you items so that they can produce more profit for the service department. And just between you and me, James, that's how many of the service advisors get paid. They get a commission. They get a piece of what they produce every month.
Wow.
You didn't know that, did you?
Well, that's why they're always trying to upsell you.
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, it's not just salespeople that are selling the cars. It's the service advisors or the service salespeople.
And Ray, one of the things I'm always debating is whether or not I should buy a car or lease a car. How do I determine what's better for me?
Well, somebody once said, who was much smarter than me, a guy by the name of Getty, had an oil company, a small oil company of some kind. He said, you buy things that appreciate in value, and you lease things that depreciate in value. I can assure you that 99.9% of all the cars out there depreciate in value. So I don't know what the point of trying to own a depreciating asset is. But if you asked me, I lease my cars. I don't buy them because I look at them as a depreciating asset. But it depends on the person and how long you're anticipating keeping the car, how many miles you're planning on driving the car. Leasing doesn't necessarily make sense for all people. My wife, God bless her, when she was alive, she hated the fact that I leased cars. She would look at me and she goes, but at the end of 3 years, we own nothing. Yeah, but we've used this car for 3 years, and now we're going to use another brand new car for the next 3 years. But we don't have anything to show for it other than the use of the vehicle. So It depends what your comfort level would be with leasing something as opposed to owning it. Now, realizing that leasing it, typically you can lease a more expensive car for a lower payment than you can financing that car. It just depends on your comfort level with a lease.
So that's a good overview of how the auto industry works and how dealerships make their money. Why don't we tie this all into the economy? And maybe you can just provide us with an overview of what's happening in the auto industry in 2024. And just as a reminder, the U.S. economy is growing very strong, 3 to 4% annualized. The jobless rate is very low. It's been below 4% now for 25 consecutive quarters. So we got a very strong economy. What's happening within the auto industry? Are we seeing strong sales?
Well, yes and no. The sales numbers that get reported seem to indicate growth. But when you dig a little deeper into the numbers, you notice that the sales that have really increased is the percentage of sales that are fleet sales to rental car companies, to governmental fleets, to large fleet buyers. Retail side of things has slowed or even stagnated to a certain degree. And there's two things, in my opinion, that contribute to that. Affordability. If you were to poll most Americans, and they have, 83% said they didn't feel as if they could afford to buy a new car. 83%. Okay, that's a huge number who says, I can't afford to play in the sandbox anymore. And that's because manufacturers during COVID, with chip shortages and everything else, only wanted to produce high profit margin vehicles, high priced vehicles. And when interest rates were next to nothing, it made it easier for people to be able to buy those. Now, with inflation and interest rates as high as they are, trying to keep an affordable monthly payment has become harder and harder for most people. So even though sales are up, there's fewer people that are actually in the market who feel as if they can afford to be in the market. Here's an interesting stat, at least in my mind. 17.3% of all people in the United States who financed a car last quarter had a payment of $1,000 or more, a monthly payment of $1,000 or more. I make a pretty decent living. I don't have a lot of expense, but I sure as hell couldn't afford $1,000 a month for a car payment.
And then when you throw on fuel, maintenance, insurance.
Exactly. Insurance has gone up about 25-30%. Gas is going up again. Everywhere you look, it's more and more expensive to maintain your vehicle and depreciation of the vehicle. If somebody has a car payment of $1,000 a month, and say they spend $200 a month in gasoline, now they're up to $1,200 a month. And insurance is another $200 a month. And now you're up to $1,400 a month. And then maintenance, maybe that's $100 a month. You're at $1,500 a month. How much money do you have to make to be able to afford to spend $1,500 a month just for transportation? I mean, that to me seems out of whack.
Ray, I'm curious, interest rates started going up in March of 2022. When did you notice this slowdown in retail sales?
I was going to say probably close to 2 years ago. You could see it happening in real time. You know, every month, most manufacturers report their sales. And you could look, and the headlines in Automotive News, which is the major automotive publication, you know, sales are up this. But then when you dig into the article and you'd see that, for instance, in, I think it was February, 44% of Nissan's sales in the United States were to fleet customers. When you start seeing the percentage of sales that are fleet sales, you could start to extrapolate that. And I know Zach and I talked about this all the time, that I dubbed it, we have an affordability issue. Most people feel like they can't afford to participate. And I just kept sensing, as inventories kept growing and interest rates kept going up, that sales were really somewhat stagnant as compared to where you thought they might have gone. If interest rates were still at 2-4%, you know, the average new car interest rate in the United States last month was probably around 9%, about 14% on pre-owned cars. Now, that's not saying you can't find interest rates lower than that when manufacturers offer specials, but if you don't qualify for those specials, your monthly payment just, we have done videos about how much more the payment becomes when the interest rate's 9% compared to 4.5% or 4%. The payment might go up $150, $160 a month higher when you're at that higher interest rate. And the other thing that we've noticed is that people are extending the length of time that they're willing to finance it for. When I started, a long loan was 36 months. The average loan at that time was 24 months. You know, if you wanted to really take some extra time, 36 months. Then it went to 48, 60, 72. People finance for 84 and 96 months. That's crazy. We just did a story the other day about somebody that got a Kia EV9, and their payment is $1,800 a month. Okay, and the total that they're paying back in interest and everything else over the life of the loan, that vehicle, it's a Kia, mind you, turned out if they make every payment, it'll cost them over $152,000 for a Kia. So when you see things like that, you realize that there's too many people that are being priced out of the market. There needs to be lower priced entry-level vehicles. And entry-level, in my mind, is $20,000 to $30,000. Last month, the Chevrolet Trax, which is a $25,000 and below price point vehicle, actually outsold all Cadillac. So they sold more Chevy Traxes last month than Cadillac sold Cadillacs. That it just indicates that there's a huge market for inexpensive entry-level vehicles.
So a few things I want to ask you here. So first of all, your point about the fleet sales. Yes. Nissan, 44% of their sales were to fleets. I guess that's a one-off. Is that your point? That's a one-off sale?
Well, it's... They couldn't find retail buyers. They're begging their dealers to take inventory. And when the dealers won't take the inventory, the manufacturer has to figure out ways to move it. And if they can't move it to their dealer body, then they go and approach their fleet customers. And they'll cut special deals for their fleet customers to take cars.
So with this slowdown that you're seeing with retail sales, what's it doing to pricing on both new and used cars? And maybe you can also tell us about what's happening to the inventory levels.
Well, inventory levels have grown dramatically. 2 years ago, there were about 900,000 new vehicles either on the ground or in transit to dealerships that were available on a monthly basis. Pre-COVID, that number was 3.4 to 4 million vehicles every month. Today, those inventory levels have built back up to about 2.8 million. So you can see inventory growing. You can see dealers' costs associated with that inventory growing. And we've seen sales stagnate. What we're also noticing is, and we just talked about this yesterday, the average transaction prices have begun to go down. 2 years ago, the average transaction price for a new vehicle was just under $50,000. Today, it's just over $45,000. So they've gone down almost $5,000 in the past 2 years. I think it was just over $44,000. Now, the average transaction price has gone down because, A, the dealers have become more motivated to lower the price of the vehicle because they don't want it sitting on their lot. The manufacturers have increased their incentive spend to get people to buy vehicles. Prior to COVID, about 11% of the cost of the vehicle, the transaction price, was actually covered by manufacturer incentives. 11%. That number dipped down to about 2%. Today, it's about 5.8%. So incentive spends from the manufacturers have increased to help lower the average transaction prices. And then we've noticed that the big profit center for the dealers, which has always been pickup trucks and SUVs, well, the pickup truck market has been contracting in the first quarter. It's down almost 5%. So it's forcing manufacturers to look at what it is that they're producing, and they're looking now at figuring out ways to produce less expensive vehicles at a lower price point than the big profit center vehicles that they had been producing that are now sitting.
One of the interesting points that you mentioned was that the inventory levels right now are 2.8 million versus prior to the pandemic, it was over 3 million. And I'm surprised to see that or hear that because interest rates were a lot lower, right? Pre-pandemic. Exactly. And now interest rates are a lot higher. I would think the inventory levels would be a lot higher now, but they're not. But maybe they're going to get a lot higher in the coming year.
Well, my suspicion is that they will. During the pandemic, you know, every one of the manufacturers said, "Oh, we've learned our lessons. We're only going to build what people want. We're going to build to order. We're not going to build to stock." And at that point, they thought they'd want to keep inventory levels somewhere between 2.2 and 2.4 million. Well, let's face it. One thing manufacturers usually do well is, well, manufacture. And they don't know how to stop. So they just kept building vehicles and they kept shipping them to dealers and inventories kept building back up and they swore that they wouldn't let it happen. But yet it's happening. And probably, I don't know, I would think by June or July, we'll see inventory levels of 3 million or slightly more. Some manufacturers are begging, literally begging their dealers to take inventory. Not to pick on Nissan again, but they were begging, they were offering dealers extra money off on the vehicles if they took them. And most of the dealers said, "We're not interested." The Stellantis brand of dealerships, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, the amount of inventory that has been turned down by their dealers keeps growing month over month. So they've produced vehicles and they're having a difficult time getting their dealers to actually take them. And the only way they're going to get their dealers to take them is to increase the incentives, whether it be customer incentives or dealer incentives, that the dealers would be able to use to lower the prices of the vehicles to make them more appealing to a larger audience.
So inventories are going up across the nation and incentives are going up. What's this doing to pricing? And I guess that might be a tough measurement given that there's such a wide range associated with cars.
An interesting statistic: in the first quarter of 2023, 31% of all new vehicles that were sold at above MSRP in 2023, the first quarter. In the first quarter of 2024, that number dropped to 16%. So dealers are understanding that they can't ask for, well, let me rephrase that. They do ask for it. They're just not expecting to get it when they ask for it now. As one of the things that Zach and I have seen, and at Car Edge, we have Car Edge coaches that actually help people buy cars. And literally, we probably work hundreds, if not close to 1,000 deals a month with customers. So we see what kind of discounts are available, how you can work a deal or to get a better deal, depending on what region of the country you're in, things like that. And what we discuss with customers in a lot of the videos, you know, we'll say prices are going down, and everybody, the comments I always say, but not in my neighborhood. Well, just because the advertised price isn't lower than what it had been doesn't mean that if you actually went into the dealership and threatened to take that vehicle home, that they wouldn't work with you to get you a lower price in order to facilitate that happening. So, yes, many dealers still ask for additional dealer markup, market adjustments, whatever it is. And that's just an ask. They're hopeful that when you walk in, you'll go, okay, well, I guess I have to pay that. The savvier buyer understands that you don't have to pay that. You just have to negotiate it off and then some. So it's, even though prices are still high, and many of the advertised prices are still high, dealers are more motivated than they have been due to the cost of carrying inventory and everything else to allow for a lower price in order to move the metal, as we say.
It sounds, I mean, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of astounded by the fact that to buy a new car in the U.S., you're paying 9%. To buy a pre-owned car, you're paying 14%. I'm surprised.
On average.
I'm surprised prices aren't significantly lower. Like, I can't believe they're still moving inventory.
Well, they're still moving enough, but not as fast as they had been. So that's why we're seeing prices slowly coming down. If the Fed doesn't cut interest rates, and you know, the most recent talk has been, well, perhaps we'll have to raise rates some more to fight inflation. Well, if that's what happens, then dealers and manufacturers are going to continue to be pressured to lower prices even further and more quickly, I would think.
And so far our discussion's been more focused on new cars, but what's happening with used cars? Is that part of the market? Well, you already said that if you financed a pre-owned car, you're paying 14%. So I can't imagine that side of the market is very robust.
Well, average transaction prices for used cars have gone down as well. But there is a shortage. There's still a shortage of good quality, younger pre-owned cars, 1, 2, 3, 4-year-old cars. And the reason for that shortage is during the pandemic, when there was the chip shortage, globally, there were about 15 to 18 million vehicles that were scheduled to have been produced that were never produced. And since those cars weren't produced, those were potentially lost sales. For instance, if 10 million of those 15 to 18 million would have been cars for the United States, typically about 60 to 70% of people who buy a car trade in a car. Well, if those 10 million potential sales were lost, there were 6 to 7 million trade-ins that were lost. So there's just this natural shortage of vehicles out there. And during COVID, we saw a phenomenon that you very rarely see, and that was used car values appreciated. So if you had leased a vehicle, and typically when leases are up, the residual value that you as the customer can buy it for if you wanted to, typically the residual value is higher than what its true market value is. During COVID shortages, residual values were actually 25 to 35% below what the market values of that vehicle was. So people didn't turn in their lease cars. They bought them because there was money to be made by buying them. They could buy it, turn around, and sell it. They could make $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, or they knew how they had treated the car, and they knew they could buy it for 30% below its market value. So those were additional cars that never made it to the used car side of things. So there's this shortage of used cars that will probably continue for the remainder of the decade. Even though used car values have come down about 15% from their high watermark, came down 15% year over year just in March, they're still well above where they had been, and probably will continue to remain at a much higher level than they historically should have been, if that makes any sense at all.
So you just mentioned something else that I want to ask you about, and you just mentioned about trade-ins.
Yes.
This is another area where I feel like I'm getting screwed over, okay? So I go in to buy a new car, and they say, yes. Oh, no, don't worry. We're going to give you a great deal here. And maybe, you know, they give me 10% off MSRP. But then on the trade-in, that's where they get me. Do you have any words of advice there when it comes to trading in?
Well, the words of advice when it comes to trading in is one of the things that we offer on the CarEdge website is the ability to get instant offers for your vehicle from sources in your market area. So you can plug in the information about your car, miles, transmission, year, make, and answer a few questions and get offers as to what dealers would be willing to pay for that. That's valuable information in the sense that you can utilize that when you go to a dealership and you try and trade it in, and they say, well, we'll give you $25,000 for your car, and you go, yeah, but CarMax said they would give me $30,000, and here's the written offer, or Carvana said they would give me $29,000, here's the written offer. So the other thing you can do is you can contact local dealers that would possibly be interested in adding your car to their used car department and get them to bid on your car. Get an offer from several offers from several dealerships so that if you decide you want to trade it in, wherever it is you're buying a new car, you can say, well, yeah, but your competitor down the street was willing to give me, they're willing to just write me a check for the vehicle for $5,000 more than you're trying to get it for. I need you to find that $5,000. So you just open it. It's almost like opening up to bidding. Let the dealers compete.
I like that. That's great advice.
Well, that's what people pay us for.
So, Ray, I want to get your opinion on a few of the big trends that are happening right now in the auto industry, and there's a lot of them, EVs being a big one, autonomous driving, also ride sharing, and I want to get your views on how this is impacting the industry. But why don't we just start with EVs? In 2020, there was 3 million EVs sold globally, and by 2023, that increased to 15 million. But everything I've been reading here in the last few months, it looks like EV sales are definitely slowing down. Tesla just came out with their Q1 sales. They produced 433,000, but they only sold 387,000. So a big miss there. Maybe you can give us your view on what's happening with EVs.
I think globally, there's a huge push for EVs. I think in Europe, the take rate for EVs seems to be much higher than it is here in North America. And I read the comments every day from our viewers. And, you know, people, I don't know if it's an American thing or what, but us Americans, we don't want to be told what we have to buy. And I think that's the prevailing mentality. And so people hate the fact that they feel like EVs are being forced on them. So the early adopters adopted. The others who were never convinced are fighting it off. Ford recently announced, and when I say recently, last week announced that they're cutting back on EV production and more investment into their EV growth, and they're turning that money and they're going to use it towards hybrids so that they can offer hybrids in every model line by the end of the decade. Well, that's almost 180 degrees from where they were. And so I think part of it is price. Most people understand that EVs are more expensive average transaction price-wise than any other vehicles out there. Many people don't understand the charging of them, the infrastructure that's necessary to allow for that charging. It doesn't seem to be as readily available as, I don't know, finding a gas station on just about any corner. So there seems to be a hesitancy, in at least in the United States. I can't speak for Canada, but there seems to be a hesitancy for the vast majority of Americans to move forward towards EVs. Will that change? Probably at some point, but at this point, many people are just saying, no, I'm never doing it. Whether they will or won't, we'll find out.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of your comments. It's the same thing in Canada. I've done a few test drives with Tesla's beautiful car, but there's a few issues. And the big one with me is range, right? Because I want to have 500 miles or 800K. You got to have that. That's what most cars have. And then the other big issue is battery chemistry, right? Because you and I both live in cold climates, and in cold temperatures, these EVs lose 20 to 30% of their charging capabilities,
exactly.
Right? So that's a big issue. If you're in Florida or Texas, California, that's not such a big deal, but in Toronto, it is. And,
of course.
And then to your point too, the infrastructure, they still have a long way to go with that. And also the pricing.
You know, they're much, much more expensive than most gas-powered vehicles. And I have said that the infrastructure has to get way ahead of adoption. If suddenly people saw charging stations up and down the interstate highways or in their local neighborhoods, it would become easier for somebody to say, I want to consider an EV. I live in a condominium. There's nowhere for me to charge my vehicle if I had an EV. So what do you do in inner cities where there's huge apartment buildings, condo complexes, even row homes where people don't have garages? How are those people supposed to charge their vehicles? So if you want people to move to that, you have to make charging readily available. They have to it has to become as easy to find as a gas station. And until that happens, I think the adoption of more and more EVs is going to continue to stagnate to a degree.
I found, I'm sure you saw the story about Hertz trying to sell their fleet of 20,000 cars.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of humorous, because one of the reasons why they were doing it is because the residual value, depreciation just collapsed. They couldn't sell the damn things because Tesla kept cutting their prices so they could move their inventory. So I thought that was kind of humorous.
Yeah, it's, you know, every time Tesla would cut their prices, it was killing Hertz, because the value of their fleet just kept going down. There's a very good friend of our channel's, Igor, who's a former major dealer in the Northeast United States. And Igor's always keeping us up to date as to what's going on. He was at the auctions yesterday. He says, you would not believe how cheap EV prices are at the moment. I mean, everybody's afraid of them because nobody knows what the floor is. There was a story we did the other day where Edmunds had bought a new Fisker Ocean EV, and they had paid $60,000+ for the vehicle. And they took it in to CarMax to see what it might be worth. $21,000 was the written offer from they over a $40,000 loss in 3 months. And my comment to Zach was, I don't know, if I was a higher up at CarMax, I'd probably be chastising the appraiser to put for having put $21,000 into a Fisker for a vehicle for a company who's about to go bankrupt. So you look at some of these things, and it's hard to extrapolate what values really should be when they're all competing for a limited number of buyers and all finding out, when I say all the manufacturers are finding out, man, we got to cut our prices. I mean, Ford had to cut prices on the Mach-E, on the Lightnings. It's the only way they could move them because everything was priced too high. So, yeah, I have no idea what the floor is, but I am certainly glad I'm not running a store these days.
So if I'm reading you correctly, when it comes to traditional cars or gas cars, prices have pulled back a little bit, but they have a long way to go. So if I was going to buy a new car, I would hold off. But if I want to buy an EV, now might be a good time.
Especially if you want to buy a pre-owned, you should be able to get some. You should be able to find some good values out there on EVs. Now, you know, the thing that you have to remember when you're looking at an EV is you need to check on the battery health. And you know, there are members of our team that own EVs. And the amount of battery degradation literally has been next to nothing in the first couple of years of ownership for these guys. So, but there's a company out there called Recurrent that can do a battery check for you. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. And so you can get some idea as to what the battery health is on a pre-owned EV. Because that, to me, would be the most important thing you need to know if you're looking at a pre-owned EV.
No, that's a very good point, and that's great advice. Thank you. Because if it's anything like my iPhone, you know, you go and spend $1,000 on a new iPhone, and then like it starts losing its charging ability. Like,
oh yes,
every year.
Yeah, no, I mean it, because they do degrade over time. There's no way to prevent it. So, and let's face it, at this point, I mean, there's varying numbers that you hear as to what it's going to cost to replace batteries. I mean, you see numbers $40,000, $50,000. You see some numbers that say, oh, no, it's closer to $10,000 to $15,000. I mean, who knows? But typically, they say the life expectancy of these batteries is a couple hundred thousand miles. But, you know, a couple hundred thousand miles, if you only drive 3,000 miles a year, that takes a real long time. So there, I think there has to be some time or mileage. It can't just be mileage as to how fast they degrade.
And now I'm curious, you said a typical battery is good for, you know, at least a couple of years, but
I think what you'll find is the batteries are probably good for 7 to 10 years. And I believe most of the manufacturers offer like a 7, 8, or 10 year warranty on the batteries, on the battery pack itself.
Now, I'm curious, when you look at your various businesses, you have a good sense of what's happening across the nation just in terms of sales and how the consumer is feeling. What's your sense, if we were to summarize everything you see and read, what's your feeling, how the U.S. economy is doing?
Well, you know, everything you read, the economy is great, but everybody says, oh, but I'm hurting. I don't know. I'm not hurting. And I think in reality, most people aren't hurting as bad as they might think they are, or might have been told that they are. But we do see that the number that has scared me was that survey of people, can you buy a car? And when 83% of the population says they can't, that's a scary number. It just seems to me that if you're a manufacturer, you want to be able to have as many people as possible in that sandbox, not as few people as possible. You don't want the market to continue to shrink as to who you're trying to sell cars to. You have to figure out ways to increase the number of people that you can sell cars to. So I think as the manufacturers look at those statistics and how deeply that ultimately can impact their businesses, I think that we will see a shift in what is being built so that they can bring more people back into the market. That's my opinion from what we've seen.
Well, that was a great discussion, Ray. As we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to offer up to our viewers? Any other words of wisdom when it comes to purchasing a vehicle?
Never concentrate on your payment. Always concentrate on the out-the-door price. The discount on the vehicle and a discussion about every fee. There's a saying we have, I should have worn the sweatshirt today, that says on the front, if it's taxable, it's negotiable. So if the fee is taxable, it's a negotiable item. Just remember that. If it's a state fee, registration, things like that, that's not taxable. But if it's some half-baked fee that they're charging you and they charge tax on it, that's a negotiable fee. So always work the out-the-door price. Work them on whatever fees they're charging to make sure that you can either get them taken off or have them reduced. And just concentrate. If I were to have to write you a check, what would the size of that check be? What would the exact amount of that check be? And then once you've established that, prior to buying a car, get pre-approved for a car loan so you know what your interest rate should be. That would be my advice.
That's great advice, and I want to thank you for spending time with us today and sharing your insights on the car industry. If someone would like to learn more about you and your various services, where can they go?
Just go to www.caredge.com. That's our website, and you can find all types of free resources, guides, videos, anything that you would need that could help you navigate that car buying experience.
And your YouTube channel?
The Ray and Zach channel and the Car Edge channel are the two main channels where you can find Zach and I espousing nonsense on a weekly and daily basis.
I might tune in this Saturday night to the live show and ask a couple of questions.
We'll let you.
Ray, once again, thank you.
Thank you, James. I enjoyed it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ray Shefska of Car Edge. I found it very informative, especially when he threw out many insights, including if it's taxable, it's negotiable. I'll keep that one in mind. But if you have any other ideas on who else you would like to see on our channel, please let us know in the comments section below. We'd love to hear from you. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel, Wealthion.com, and also hit that notification button to be kept up to date on future events. Once again, thank you for spending time with us today, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.